Right, so we've seen the transition. We've seen the change from the late embryo into the early fetus. You can see now that the vertebral column's elongating and the trunk's getting longer. And so we're getting substantial growth in the length. You can see the beginning of differentiation of the internal genital structures, but still undifferentiated externally. And the lungs haven't changed all that much from what we saw in the embryonic period. So there's still a lot more development of the respiratory system that has to occur. Let's now have a look at the events that are occurring in the second trimester. And during the second trimester, a lot of analysis can be done of the developing fetus using ultrasound scans. So ultrasound can be used during the transition into the second trimester to measure a whole lot of informative information about growth and development of the fetus. There are parameters that we use to measure the developing fetus, the overall size, crown rump length, the diameter of the body, the size of the head, the length of the bones and the arms. All of this will give us information about the best date for the growth of the fetus. So firstly, ultrasound is our most accurate measurement of developmental staging. And secondly, it will be informative clinically to diagnose abnormalities that may have occurred. Can you think of some abnormalities that might have occurred during the embryonic period that we might detect in the fetal period with ultrasound? I heard someone. Spina bifida. So an abnormality that occurred way back there in the early stages of embryonic development when the neural tube closed, we can detect that abnormality of spina bifida. Is there anything else that we might be able to pick up with ultrasound? Septation of the heart. One of the other major abnormalities that can occur is failure of the ventricular or atrial septum to form correctly. And now we have Doppler flow techniques where we can actually follow blood flow through the fetus. So heart abnormalities. Any other sorts of abnormalities we might pick up with ultrasound? Anencephaly, the failure of the anterior neuropore to close. So major neurological abnormalities, the failure of any correct central nervous system formation can be identified in an ultrasound. Anything else we might pick up? We can look for musculoskeletal abnormalities. So by doing a scan of the limbs, we can see whether there's a correct number of digits. We can compare the length of the limbs to make sure they're the right length for that age of the fetus. We can look for the correct anatomy of the fetus. Remember I told you that the midgut is drawn back into the body as the body grows, and so there is an abnormality called gastritis where the midgut remains herniated outside the abdominal cavity. It's a major systemic abnormality. What else might we pick up? Placental abnormalities. Most importantly, outside of the fetus, we can identify abnormalities of the placenta, some things such as abnormal number of blood vessels in the cord, abnormal implantation into the wall or size of the placenta, or position of the blood vessels. So, for example, placenta previa across the cervix, or basa previa if the blood vessels of the placental cord run across the cervix. Anything that might lead us to worry later on about parturition events, birth. There are other... Sorry? That's right, that's what I was talking about in terms of placental previa. The other systems that we should be looking at with the ultrasound are the kidneys. And so one of the major abnormalities that can occur during development is, like many of the other systems I described to you when we do BGDB, is that the tubular structures proliferate and become solid during development, and then they recanalize. And if this process doesn't occur correctly, then we can have a blockage of the ureters, and therefore urine that's being made within the kidney will accumulate within the renal pelvis and we'll see damage to the developing kidneys as it builds up like a big balloon. In addition to that, we can see whether we've actually got kidneys. So there are abnormalities in relation to the number of kidneys that form or their position anatomically. So this will all be quite useful diagnostically. There are also other measurements that can be made. such as the nuchal translucency in an ultrasound, which is a region in the neck of the fetus. It's a clear region when you scan it with the ultrasound. And we know that a broad nuchal translucency correlates with what?
Down syndrome,
trisomy 21. So an enlarged nuchal translucency is an indicator that would be followed up with a number of genetic tests as well. So let's have a look at a 12-week fetus here. This is an ultrasound. This is the anterior body wall. Here's the head, spinal cord, the abdomen, the lower limbs. The hand is sitting adjacent to the oral cavity here. So we could also scan the head region to look for what sort of abnormalities might be present in the oral region. Clefting of the palate. And so I've got some ultrasound scans we'll have a look at that show you clefting in that region as well. So this is a traditional scan, and in addition to that, we can have 3D scans now that give us the three-dimensional structures that are reconstructed from the computer that tell us the position and length of the cord, the position of the placenta, and what the limbs look like as well. So there are a large number of diagnostic tools that can be used. And importantly, when we look at the growth, that's interesting, should link to the other image. Huh. That's good. I'll fix that. Importantly, when we look at the growth through this time, you'll see this linear growth through the second and third trimester until by the end at birth we're up here for crown rump length of about 350 millimetres or so. But diagnostically and clinically, you usually stop measuring the crown rump length in the second trimester, and we change the parameters and measure the crown leg length. So that's the additional difference that's done, a change from crown rump, as we saw in the early embryo, to the crown leg length. But we see this linear sort of increase over this time, beginning right down here. So if we now look inside the fetus at 12 weeks, inside the skull, then this is what we see. And this has been stained for two dyes, Alzerian red, which stains bone, so anything that's red or purple here is where bone is forming, and cartilage with Alcyon blue, so anything that's staining blue is where cartilage is located. Now this is a lateral view of the fetal head, 12 weeks, so 2 weeks on from the previous image we were looking at. And you can see the developing lower jaw and the maxillary region here. And you can even see in the lower jaw the regions where the teeth will be forming, sitting down in the gums just here as well. So this is ossifying here in this region, around the orbit. And notice as well, here is one of the cranial plates that I was talking about. And the cranial plates are ossifying by a unique process we see in the head, which is what form of ossification from your histology classes? In a membrane, so it's intramembranous ossification, which is occurring in this region. So a unique form of ossification whereby instead of there being a pre-existing cartilage in this region, the membrane in that site is ossifying directly, and it's radiating out like a big spider web. So it grows from a central portion and radiates out, correlating with what we saw for the vascular plexus growing out. So these are new bone spicules forming here, and these will continue to expand but won't be complete even by birth. So we have sutures, fibrous sutures lying between these plates, and fontanelle, large openings in the skull as well, still at birth. And this allows continued growth of the head and also allows passing of the head through the birth canal, so you can compress this structure. So here's the intramembranous ossification that we're seeing up here, and down on the vertebra we'll see endochondral ossification. If we look in a midline at this head, so a medial view of the head, that's from the other side, we can now see that structure I identified in the previous section, and that is, section of notes, and that is that this is the cartilaginous base of the skull. And you can see at this stage that the base of the skull is still basically all cartilage. There are a few sites where ossification is commencing, these primary ossification sites, but most of the base of the skull is cartilage. So what form of ossification occurs here? I know you've done it in histology. Maybe you haven't. Endochondral. So endochondral ossification, that's the same form of ossification that's occurring throughout the entire rest of the skeleton. So in the body and limbs, we're seeing replacement of a cartilage template with bone later on, except for the scapular region. So this region through here will later ossify to form the base of the skull, except for this anterior region here, which is still present in you. This is the nasal septum. It remains as cartilage. It never ossifies and stays as cartilage and continues to grow for the rest of your life. So eventually you'll have a bigger nose as an older person and a bigger ear as well. These cartilaginous regions continue to grow postnatally. So that's what the head looks like at this stage. And in terms of lung development, we can divide it up into these discrete stages, and that is during the embryonic period when it first forms, and then this extensively long period from late embryo through the second trimester, where we describe the appearance of the lung as pseudoglandular, as we just saw. And then towards the end of the second trimester, we see it changing to a canalicular appearance, and that is that there's less solid material within the lung, and it's much more a series of tubular structures, as I've outlined in the diagram just here. But since branching is continuing, we still haven't reached the very end of our terminal branches of this tree, so we've not yet formed the alveoli. It's only out here in the third trimester where we begin to generate the terminal sac regions, the sites of where the alveoli will form. And in fact, the alveoli continue to form from the late fetal period through postnatally. So the lungs continue to grow postnatally up to about 8 years of age. So we're continuing to add alveoli and increase their volume postnatally. So the respiratory system is one of those systems that continues. Importantly, the functional cells of the alveoli, the ones which secrete surfactant, don't mature until just before birth. And so premature infants that are born before those surfactant-secreting cells are differentiated will have respiratory problems. So this is the major problem you have with preterm infants, the lack of surfactant to allow the alveoli to stay inflated. So that's the lung. If we look at some of the endocrine glands, I mentioned to you that they form in the embryonic period, but they become functional in the second trimester. So early in the second trimester, we see the functioning of the pituitary gland. So by week 10, we can detect growth hormone secretion and ACTH secretion. By week 16, the anterior pituitary is fully differentiated in terms of the cells that we expect to be present there. And in week 20 to 24, we get a peak level of growth hormone secretion from the pituitary, and then it declines gradually towards birth. The reason I talk about endocrine function is because it's its function during the fetal period which contributes to fetal development and growth. And so abnormalities in endocrine development can lead to abnormalities in other systems that are forming. In particular, the best example of this is the thyroid gland. Now, the thyroid was present in the embryo. We could see the thyroid cells forming then. And then in about week 10, that fetus that we saw before, we can actually detect the secretion of fetal thyroid hormones. Now, initially, this fetal thyroid hormone is inactive or inactivated very early on. So it's not the active form that we see. But as we get later and later through fetal development, we get activation of this fetal thyroid hormone. And this fetal thyroid hormone is critical for neural development. So if you don't have correct formation of the thyroid gland and it's unable to make normal thyroid hormone, this leads to abnormalities in neural development. And this condition is described as cretinism. It's a lack of neurological development due to a lack of thyroid hormone in your diet. How do we get iodine in our diet these days? Salt. Yes, it doesn't magically appear there. It's actually supplemented to the salt, just like we supplement wheat with what?
or wheat products.
Folate.
So there are. We already know that these environmental effects can be helped by supplementing the maternal diet. During the second and third trimester, we also get extensive development of the skin. Now, people don't often talk about development of the skin, but the development of the special hairs that form in the skin, sebaceous gland development, is quite important for fetal functioning of the skin, because the fetal skin secretes a thick, wax-like secretion over its surface, which appears to have two functions in fetal development, and that is it protects the skin or the epidermis from sitting inside a swimming pool for 9 months. If you sit in a warm bath for a good 30 minutes with the bath, spa running and a glass of wine, then your skin becomes quite wrinkly, doesn't it? So this waxy protection protects the epidermis. And the second role is that it's thought that it might aid also in parturition, so passing through the birth canal, quite a slippery coating on the surface. So the development of the skin, the development of the glands of the skin occurs through the fourth to fifth month, and the innervation of the sensory regions and the sensory specializations occur. We also see development of the external genital structures. Now, I will go through this in some detail in BGDB. At this point in BGDA, all you need to be aware of is that the gonad goes first, that is, you form an ovary or a testes. If that forms correctly, then you'll form a correct internal tract, that is, either the ductus deferens or the uterus and vagina. And if the gonad is formed correctly, then later on after that forms, we'll get correct external genital development. And that is all of the external genitalia for male and female. In these two animations here, you'll see that both the female external and the male external begin life exactly the same. And it's only during the fetal period that we discriminate between the two. And once again, genital abnormalities feature high on our list of abnormal development that occurs that we detect at birth as well. So this system occurs through the fetal development. So we can track it here. Here's the development of the external genital structures on the female. This is the clitoris at the top. This is the labia. And these are the external labia folds. And this is the rectum down here. So you can see the formation of the external genital structures in the female. Now, from exactly the same primordia in the male, we form the penis at the top here, the shaft of the penis, and these will be the scrotal folds here. Now, one of the other events that needs to occur in male development is that initially the scrotal folds don't actually contain the testes. The testes are still back up here in the abdominal cavity, so they still need to descend into these scrotal swellings. I'll stop there, have a look through the second trimester, and we'll come back and have a look at the third trimester of development.